Welcome to the Teresa Romer Show. I am a lifestyle entrepreneur, I'm a fashion designer, and I'm an award-winning author. We have a very, very special show for you today. Craig Malslow from the Houston Press submitted some really great, and I mean great, questions about my life to my PR and management firm in New York City, Astonish Media Group. I've asked my show producer and manager, Paula Conway, to read the questions her office received from Craig at the Houston Press. These are really good questions that we think we should answer, and I thought it would be a really great idea if we answered them on the show. Paula, have you called in yet?
Hi. Hello. Well, we are experiencing apparently some technical difficulties here. This is the Teresa Romer Show, and this is Paula Conway, her show producer. And Teresa and I have a great show planned for today, but unfortunately, we are still trying to figure out this dashboard.
I am here.
Oh, there she is. We'll figure
there
this out.
I am. So, listen, guys, welcome to the Teresa Romer Show. Thank you, Paula, for taking the reins here. So, I'm a lifestyle entrepreneur. I'm a fashion designer, and I'm an award-winning author. And we have a really, really great show for you guys today. Craig Malslow from the Houston Press has submitted some really, 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 and I'm talking really great questions about my life to my PR and management firm in New York, Astonish Media Group. And I've asked my show producer and manager, Paula, which you've already listened to her speak for a few minutes there, to read the questions her office received from Craig at the Houston Press. These are really good questions. I hope you guys enjoy these questions as much as we did. And I think we're going to answer them on the show today, and I hope you enjoy it.
All right, so we're ready. The first question, how much money has Teresa Romer given to charity and which charities? Great question, because you've got a lot of charities.
You know, Paul, that's an awesome question, because there's a lot of people out there that know what a huge philanthropist I am. Sorry, you guys, I just went for this amazing run, and now I'm, like, trying to cool down here. You know, the American Heart Association, which has been extremely near and dear to my heart, because my brother, at the age of 23, died of a massive heart attack, and, of course, I have a heart murmur and mitral valve prolapse from having rheumatic fever so many times as a child. So we donate hundreds of thousands of dollars to the American Heart Association. I actually co-chaired the American Heart Association Heart Ball for Montgomery County in 2012, where we raised over $800,000. And so extremely proud of that. You know, we are ambassadors for Texas Children's Hospital. Y'all know that I sit on the board of directors for Child Legacy International, which is near and dear to my heart. I go to Africa and help with the water wells and look at our project over there quite often. But you know what? We give much more than just money. You know, I donate my time. I volunteer. You know, I'm not just about writing the check. I'm also about going, volunteering, getting in there, you know, hands first and seeing what's going on. You know, just recently I came back from New York City where I was a volunteer for the Kids Need More Camp Adventure for kids with cancer. It's always more than just, you know, what you can write in a check, Paula.
Yep, absolutely. Okay, the second question is, how successful was Teresa Romer as a business owner or entrepreneur before she married a millionaire? Wow.
Well, the great thing there, Paula, was I was a millionaire before I met my millionaire.
Yeah, so, and you were doing a lot of things.
You know, I have been an entrepreneur since I was a little kid. You know, it started out on the ranch having to milk cows and do chores, which led to later on when we moved to the city, you know, I wanted to make money, you know, so I started delivering newspaper routes at the age of 10, and you know, just from there it just grew. And so I think I take after my father on that, because he was an entrepreneur. But I was definitely successful enough to own my own businesses, put a roof over my head, you know, feed my kids, take care of my children, you know, pretty much live the all-American dream that everyone wants to, you know, do. I had my own personal training services. I owned, started up a chain of health clubs called Body by Design in Wyoming. Sold those. You know, I became a health club consultant. I also became a certified or licensed real estate agent for the state of Texas, and have been hanging my license with Beth Wolf Realtors in the Galleria area for, you know, 12 years now. And plus, when I met my husband, I was doing actually two careers. I was a regional district supervisor for Valley Total Fitness, which I was overseeing over 15 facilities here in Houston, as well as a real estate agent. So I was putting in about 16 hours a day. So, and to this day, I still work. I'm still a real estate agent. I run my own companies. I help my husband with his four oil companies. So, you know, don't ever want to quit working. I enjoy working.
You know, that's the thing I think people don't really know about you, which is why this is such a great question, too, is that you are... You always have worked very hard, even as a child, as you said, and it's part of your makeup to just go out there and build something and create something.
Yeah,
okay.
I love to work. I feel like God puts you on this earth for a reason, and it's not just to sit here; it's to, you know, work hard and give back, and totally, most definitely help those that are less fortunate also.
Well, and speaking of that, the next question I think is my personal favorite because it's something a lot of people don't really understand, which is this. The press release says, and Craig is referring to a press release that we'd sent to the Houston Press on your behalf, there is also Teresa is also a highly sought-after corporate philanthropist. Could you please explain what a corporate philanthropist is and who exactly is seeking her out? Love the question.
That is an awesome question because this is another part of Teresa Romer that a lot of people don't know because a lot of people don't know me that well, and I stay somewhat private in a lot of the things that I do. But, you know, I help connect corporations with worthy causes, worthy organizations that need corporate money for their sponsorships, you know, just like American Heart Association, you know. I'm always on their executive leadership committees. We go out there and we connect the corporations that can give the most dollars to such a worthy cause. You know, I've helped Neiman Marcus, ExxonMobil, Chevron, American Heart Association, American Cancer Society, Susan G. Komen. You know, right now I'm working with the American Cancer Society for a huge gala that will be held out here in the Woodlands in May. You know, we're having another Fashion Woodlands here coming up in October that's going to help two different charities, Child Legacy International and another foundation that has black tie galas here in Houston all the time, the Joe Negro Foundation. So, you know, we're constantly working together trying to, you know, put those great corporations that can spend the dollars and help these amazing charities out.
Now, I'm just curious, Teresa, do these organizations, do they always pay you, or is it something that you just volunteer to do?
You know, sometimes I get paid to do it, but sometimes I just volunteer and do it just because I'm happy to do it. You know, I mean, like when you can bring two amazing things together, you know, which is a corporation that has the monies to support a cause, and get that charity to take that money and do amazing things with it, it makes you feel good. So sometimes I don't even want to get paid. It's like, forget it. I just did it out of the kindness of my heart because it tugged at my heart and I feel good about it. So, yeah, you don't always get paid for it.
All right, so the next question is, Teresa's closet was estimated to be 3,000 square feet and costing $500,000, and it was filled with expensive luxury items. Actually, there's no question there. It's not a question per se, but it is an awesome closet. So let's talk about the closet. Tell us what you do in that closet.
Oh, you know, it's amazing because last year when that closet went viral, it was actually portrayed in such a negative way. And if someone would have actually taken the time to portray it in the right light that it was actually made for, it would have been helpful. I think probably the closest publication that did it was probably Parade magazine.
Parade,
but,
yeah.
Yeah, you know, that closet is always in motion. That closet was actually built for charities. I've always been a person that's been known to have very big and very beautiful closets because that's just who I am. I'm no different than the guy that likes to own a couple Lamborghinis and Ferraris or the guy that likes to have the big man cave for his football games or whatever. You know, everyone has their thing, and I always loved having beautiful closets. And it was always amazing that every time we hosted a charity event at our home, the women would always say, "Teresa, can we go see your closet? I've heard about it. I want to see it." So sure enough, we'd pour our champagne and we'd venture off to the closet. And before you knew it, it was always the women sitting in the closet drinking champagne, giggling, having fun, staring at beautiful things, and the men would be doing their own thing. And I thought, you know, why not build a closet so big that we can actually hold the charity events in the closet? And so the premise of that closet was to be a venue for charity events. And,
well, and
I'm telling you what. I'm sorry?
Oh, no, continue.
No, and I'm telling you, it has been the biggest, because no one has ever done it before. And I think what's important sometimes is when you can do something that no one else has ever done, then you've hit a home run. And I have been praised by many and you know, Paula, I get over-indated with requests.
Yeah.
For
yeah,
charity
do.
Events closet, and we have to weed through them. I mean, we probably get hundreds a month, and you have to weed through them and see which ones are good fits and which ones aren't, you know. But and that's how I ended up volunteering a couple weeks ago at Kids Need More, is because last year after the whole incident and the robbery and everything in my closet, one of the very first charity events I ever held in that closet was for Kids Need More Camp Adventure for the kids with cancer. And so That closet just, you know, I have a champagne bar on the second floor. The champagne flows freely throughout the charity events that are being hosted there. And then another thing that people don't even realize about the closet is with all the designer things that are in that closet, a lot of those designer things in that closet are swapped out for charities. Like just not even a week ago, I donated an Oscar de la Renta gown that has been filmed many times to the Women's Home of Houston for their Renew and Redo fashion show, where I was a fashion icon last week. And that was donated so that it would bring thousands of dollars for that charity.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because, you know, people do ask me all the time, does Teresa actually keep her own clothes in there? Because people sometimes, I think, get confused that it actually is your closet and it is this space that you use to raise money. And that is the kind of one of the most interesting parts, is that, yes, your things are in there, but everything gets moved out at some point.
Right, right. And yeah, and that's the big million-dollar question there. Is it just for show, or does she actually use that closet? Yes, I get dressed in that closet every day. My clothes are in that closet. My makeup station's in that closet. I mean, like everything, that's just my little area of the home that I call mine. It's private. It's for me, you know, but then I gladly open it up for charity events. But yes, everything in that closet eventually gets, you know, rotated out. And, you know, whether it's a pair of Christian Louboutin shoes that have been signed by him, or a bag, or, you know, just recently also for the Women's Home, I donated four different Louis Vuitton bags also for their charity events. So, yeah, things that's the little part that most people don't know about that closet is it's everything in that closet eventually gets given to a charity so that it helps raise more money.
And speaking of charities, the next question relates to that as well. First thing Craig writes is, on her website she states, in quotes, "I was in Malawi just a week before I headed to the mountain. I was with the children, loving them, playing with them, helping them, and drilling water wells." So he writes the question, how does Mrs. Romer balance the extravagance and pride of material goods with the crushing poverty she's apparently witnessed firsthand, where children have limited access to fresh water? And he goes on, has she ever felt guilty or in any way self-conscious about flaunting such extraordinary wealth? Or does she feel that wealth is a reflection of how successful you are as a person, and maybe by showing off all her luxuries, she's motivating children to strive to be the best so that one day they too can own expensive things? Now, I think there's an opinion in there. I'm not exactly certain, but I think there is. But it's a great question.
That's a great question, because only probably you and a lot of my close friends and the people that I actually climbed that mountain with know a lot about that whole, you know, Malawi and what goes on over there. But, you know, there are so many people who have money in this world that never even bother to give a dime. You know, they just set on their money. They spend it on themselves. They don't care. You know, they don't even
Most
spend
people.
Give one dime. Some of them don't even tithe at church, you know. So I feel really lucky to have the money to write these checks. But not only do I write the checks, I like to, like I said previously, I like to go there. I like to be hands-on. I like to see where my money and other people's money goes and what it's going for. You know, when I came back from Malawi for Child Legacy International, I did feel really guilty. I mean, my life, I was a changed person. And a lot of my friends were like, "Woo, you just seem different now." And I'm like, I'm telling you, you go over there and it changes your world. I wanted to come home. I wanted to sell my house, my cars, my furs. I wanted to sell everything and give everything to everyone in Malawi. I didn't care. I was like, oh, I don't care. I'll just go live under a bridge. I mean, I feel that the poverty is so amazing over there. It's so sad. And but the fact of the matter is that if I would have done that, then that would have not really helped the situation. I mean, I can change lives by being in this position and being able to help give what I'm lucky enough to have and have worked so hard to have. But I can not only just, instead of throwing my money at them, I go over there and I help teach them how to sustain life themselves. Not just get a handout of food and a handout of money at the moment, for the moment, but to actually go over there, teach them how to do things on their own and how to be able to sustain life on their own. You know, I'm not just sitting here hoarding my own money. I'm sharing it. I'm giving away a lot of money every year, my time, my sweat equity. You know, awareness is what's key here, not wealth.
That's it. That's exactly right. And myself, we're all guilty, I think, of criticizing people in positions of power and wealth who, you know, give away to charities, but then you see them in their beautiful gowns on the red carpet, you know, and you really have to remind yourself that if they didn't have that, they wouldn't be able to help in the way that they are. And so I think you really hit the most important point on that, or with that one. All right, going on to the next question. Did Mrs. Romer climb Mount Kilimanjaro on a solo expedition, or did she hire a professional crew to assist her? If it was the latter, how many people were on the detail, and how much did she pay for this service? How much money was raised, and will that money be accurately reflected in Child Legacy International's 990s? So let's talk about your detail. Exactly who went up with you?
Well, I wish I would have had a whole tribe of people fanning me and feeding me grapes along the way.
They wouldn't have made it.
That would have been fun. Maybe stopped and got a pedicure along the way. You know, and it was funny because I was approached by Dennis McGuire in 2009. And asked if I'd be willing to do this climb, and I said, "Are you kidding? No, I don't camp. I haven't camped since I was a little kid. You know, no, it's not." And he said, "Well, Teresa, you're so fit, and you know, this just seems like it's something right up your alley. But you know, maybe it's just too hard for you to do. You know, well, there you go. You challenged me." So I was like, "Oh, Lord, oh my!" So I actually got connected with Child Legacy with Dennis McGuire and Mike Navioli, and in 2009, just delved headfirst into this charity. I just fell in love with it. As you're all aware, I lost my 19-year-old son in 2006 in a terrible car accident, and it just seems like if there's anything to do with children right now in my life, it's my one saving grace that helps me get past that horrible death and helps me just find a purpose in this life. And I feel like I'm creating my son's legacy since he wasn't here long enough to actually do it himself. But in 2010, I held the first fundraising event for Child Legacy International at Carlton Woods Country Club. We raised $60,000 that night, with people knowing very little about this charity. And then I went on to train and go and do the first inaugural climb with Mike Navioli and seven others on Mount Kilimanjaro. So we literally had to fund our own way over there. You know, we had to have our own airplane tickets. We had to have our own monies to pay for the entire climb and the hotel before and after and so on and so forth. So anyways, it was the first inaugural climb. This year they just completed their fourth climb. So, it happens every single year, and we continue to raise monies for the water well drilling that we do over there. But that particular event was amazing because I had trained feverishly for that. I knew I was ready for it, but what most people didn't know that the week prior to the climb, I was in Malawi helping with the wells and kissing and hugging on all the little kids, and I ended up contacting a parasite, did not know it until day three of the climb on Mount Kilimanjaro. And on day three, that parasite kicked in. And so while everyone else was carb loading to have the energy to summit, I was literally having everything wash right out of me without going into graphic detail. By the time I got to base camp with everyone, the fever had set in, and still didn't want to let anybody know because I knew I would be sent back home. You know, they'd say, go down, you're too sick. And I had promised everyone in the city of Houston, where we raised $100,000 for this climb, for the water wells, I had promised everyone I was going to climb that mountain. And I knew physically I had trained for it, I was ready for it, and I was not going to let this stupid little bug send me home defeated. So we proceeded to summit that night. Finally, it had to be known that I was sick. I had blood coming out of every orifice of my body. And the rest of the group went forward. They summited at around 7 in the morning. I didn't summit till around 9:45, which my certificate proves. And then by the time we got back to base camp, they literally threw me on a flat board, and six Kenyan runners ran down the park with me for 8 straight hours. I was losing consciousness in and out. Literally, they said the only way I was not going to die was to get me off that mountain. So at around 10 p.m., I was, we got to the gate of the park where an ambulance was waiting. I had 104 fever. But the whole part of the story is I when I set my mind to things, I don't give up. And even though I literally was near death's door on that mountain, I was not going to be defeated. I wanted to do it. In my son's memory, I was going to do it. I promised Houston I was going to do it. And even if I lost my life, I was going to finish that climb. So, I hold child legacy near and dear to my heart. We get a letter every single year from Charity Navigator, and we receive a 4-star rating from Charity Navigator, which is the highest rating you can get for our accuracy and our transparency when it comes to the funding that we receive. So, I just couldn't be more proud to be part of such an amazing organization. But that's a lot of people know that story, and a lot of people don't know that story. But I'm very proud to have done that climb and almost lost my life for it.
But you just said it was 8 hours to get you down.
Yeah, because we were after we had summited, we came down to base camp, which was around 15,800 feet. And helicopters don't fly that high. So they literally slapped me on a flat board and ran for 8 straight hours with me. And supposedly we left base camp around 3 in the afternoon. I was floating in and out of consciousness, and we arrived at the gate somewhere around 10 p.m. that night.
When you were climbing up, who was cooking for you? I mean, did you have people who were professional climbers to help, because everybody there, you know, hadn't done this before?
Sure. No, you're not allowed to climb Mount Kilimanjaro without hiring a guide service. Everyone, because you literally, it's a 6-day climb. You can't go do it by yourself. You have no way to carry that amount of food. You know, so you literally have a guide service, which means one guide for every person that's in your group. They carry all of your supplies, your food, everything that's on your back is basically your water, your toiletries, you know, your snacks, but they carry your sleeping bags, your all of your food supplies, everything. And so your meals are cooked for you every step of the way, and you have to sleep in tents or different cabins along the way. So, yeah, you're not allowed to even climb Mount Kilimanjaro unless you hire a guide service.
So needless to say, no hairdressers and makeup artists.
Well, needless to say, my bath every day consisted of a baby wipe.
It was
a baby wipe bath every day, and my hair stayed braided for the whole entire time. And you have no makeup. You have no luxuries. You are sleeping on a sleeping bag. You're freezing cold. I mean, it's definitely not a luxury climb, no.
I'm just amazed that you made it, because so many people probably would never have lived. I mean, you were near death, and your body was strong, and thank God it was, but so many people would never have actually made it back down. So it's an intense thing that you did, and I'm not sure I could do it. You know, I don't think most people would sign up for that, no matter what. But they challenged you, which was all they had to do to get you to go.
That's usually my biggest motivational tool, is when somebody says I can't do something. I definitely love to prove them wrong, because I, you know, back when I sold my health clubs, and I said to my mother, you know, why would I want to sell my health clubs? I'm living the all-American dream. I have beautiful home, beautiful cars, beautiful kids, beautiful friends, beautiful vacations. I have my beautiful clubs. This is all I've ever dreamed of. And she said, are you only allowed to have one dream in life? And I said, wow.
What?
So ever since then, and I sold my health club chain, and you know, I've lived amazingly well ever since, even before then. But I've set out to have a new dream every single year, because I thank my mother for telling me that, because it was like, wow, I thought you're only allowed to have one big huge dream in life and go after it. But no,
wow.
It's been amazing. I every year I set out and I put out another big dream and I fulfill it. So I encourage everyone to do the same.
That's brilliant. A new dream every year. I think that's brilliant. I don't know that I've ever heard that put in that way. I mean, we make New Year's resolutions, but you've put it into a much larger context, like a new dream every year. And you're right. You had earlier in the conversation, you had referenced that some of these questions had been addressed by Gerald Brunner at Parade Magazine, who did a wonderful feature on you. But many of them haven't, and I'm sure they'll be asked again. And it sheds a great deal of light on, yes, your life and how you've created it and designed it and where you are today.
Right. You know, a very smart man a while ago asked me a very great question and said, you know, explain to me what your greatest life achievement is. And I had to respond back to him and say, you know what, I don't think a person should be defined by only having one great life achievement. I think you should be allowed to have many.
And change your mind.
Yeah, exactly.
I think people put a lot of pressure on themselves to define that, you know, to find that what their passion is and what their goals are, instead of realizing that they can just change. You know, you can achieve many goals and they can also change. And that's what you have done consistently throughout your life.
Yes. Well, I encourage others to do so also, because, you know, we've all been put on this earth for a reason, and I challenge everyone to get out there and find out what your reason is for being here on this earth. I definitely want to thank you all so much for joining us today, and I want to thank Houston Press for submitting these amazing, wonderful questions and giving us a great show, because it allows us to even shed more light on what I actually do, instead of how the media misconstrued a lot of it last summer. So, you know, I'm excited to be back next week, next Saturday. Look for the show that will be pasted on our Facebook page to give you more information on our next show for next week. And look me up on Facebook on Teresa Romer, LLC. Look me up on Twitter at Teresa Romer. I'm even on Instagram at Teresa Romer. And I wish everyone to have an amazing, amazing rest of your Saturday, and have a great start to next week.
Thanks, everybody. I'm gonna end our episode.
Thanks, Paula.